This is May 2nd, 1976. It's 8 o'clock in the evening. We are in the home of Mr. and Mrs. Ernst Frederickson in Orange County. Your name, sir?
Ernst Frederickson.
And where do you come from in Denmark?
Nakskov, for Lolland.
And when did you first come to the United States?
1942, I believe in August somewhere.
And are you a citizen of the United States?
Yes, I am. I was naturalized in Brooklyn, New York in 1953.
We're turning the microphone over to Ernst's wife now. What was your maiden name?
Olsen. Inge Olsen.
Do you have a middle name?
No, no middle name. And I was born in Copenhagen in 1927. I came to the United States April 24th in 1949. I landed in Hoboken, New York.
Did you go through Ellis Island?
No, I did not go through Ellis Island. They came on board ship and checked papers, and you went right from the ship, and then wherever your destination was in New York.
What ship did you come on?
Jutlandia. I almost forgot that so many years ago. I came over on the Jutlandia, yeah.
Now, did you know Ernst in Denmark in earlier times, or how did the two of you meet?
Well, that goes back many years. We have met before we met in New York and got married, but we did meet when he was about 15 and I was 8, and he babysat for me and a cousin up in Elsinore on Sealand. From there on, then we didn't meet until in New York in the Danish Athletic Club, and we got married 6 months later.
Was there a particular reason why you came to the United States?
Well, if you want to call it a particular reason, I always wanted to come to the United States. Ever since I was a little tot and could point at a map, this is where I wanted to come. And I presume this is as good a reason.
Why?
To me, America was always a land of opportunity, and it was an interesting land, country. Wanted to go and see it, I guess.
Would you tell us, did you have a dream of America before you came here, sir?
No, not really. I had always wanted to settle in Australia, but due to the war year, the war came in, World War II, and Australia was a hard place to get to at them times. So I settled for United States. I had been in the United States prior to World War II as a seaman, and mostly on the West Coast, Los Angeles, Vancouver, or Seattle, and up and down that coast, carrying fruits from Canada, and canned bananas up from Mexico and so on. And I thought that was just as good a place as any if I had the choice between Australia and the United States.
Ernst, were you given a special training before you went aboard a ship, or did you just as a boy ship out? Did you was there a special schooling or anything that you had to take before you became a seaman?
No, not in them days. I was young, real young, and I had to have my parents' permission to sail and ship out, because I had just been confirmed, and I was underage legally to ship out, unless I had the parents' consent. And Dad, he wanted me to be a mechanic. And I couldn't see that being a mechanic at them days, but as of today, I wish I did have been one.
Well, you must have been just over 14 when you shipped out the first time.
That's right. I was just barely 15. I had just turned 15, matter of fact. And I talked to the parents, and Dad, he said, no. He said, he's going to be a mechanic. And Mom said, oh, why don't you give the boy a chance? So I guess that's what it was all about then. There was no schooling or anything like that. It was just a matter of going to a shipping company. And if there was a job open, you had the job, you know. It was just, then after you had sailed anything when you start in Denmark, you start out as a mess man or mess boy or in the kitchen or serving, you know. And then after so many years, you are, if you like to continue, you join the union, the sailors union, and which I did, and I stayed with it for years. And
after you decided to stay in the United States, what reaction did you get from your mother and father?
Well, I mean, my dad, after then, Second World War II, my dad passed away, so all I had was my mother left. And, I mean, she thought that I had done the right decision on it.
And would you tell us how your parents or your friends felt about you coming to the United States?
Oh, boy, that's a hard question, because... Well, ever since, like I told you, that I wanted to go to the United States, my mother probably thought it was the right thing to do, and she never stood in any of her kids' ways to be able to do whatever we each individual wanted to do for ourselves.
And did you come to the United States alone?
Yes, I came alone. I had nobody else.
How old were you?
I think I was, 22. I had to figure that out first.
Did you speak English?
Yes. I had been to England 2 years prior to that.
And when you went to England, did you speak English?
No, not one word. Not a single word. That was something you had to pick up.
How did you manage in England? Are there any incidences that happened that because of your inability to speak English?
Well... No, actually, I don't think so. I think the people I lived with made it very easy. Of course, when you first land and you can't speak the language, you kind of get stuck once in a while. And
did you get stuck?
Well, kind of in customs, they kind of pulls a big piece of paper up in front of you. You're supposed to be able to read what it says if you have any of the things to declare. And I couldn't read it, so I just shook my head. I didn't have any of it. And he repeated the same thing again, just looked at me like shook his head and probably thought I was kind of a nut and let me go. And but another thing was that one word that you'll find a lot of Scandinavian people, I think, has a hard time saying is the number three. And in England, you ask for a stamp by the word of saying threepence. And this was something that I could not say. So I got mad at the post office and I stamped my finger and I said, I want a 1, 2, 3 stamp. That was the only way I could get through. Well, that was kind of fun in one way, but it was also scary because you've got to get up in front of a whole class of young kids and explain about your country. It was suggested to me that I should write it down, what I wanted to say. But since I didn't read very good English, there was no sense writing it down because I couldn't read it. So I just based it on what I knew of things. I made little notations and in Danish, and then I explained it in English. Of the Danish porcelains and whatever, and our holidays, I explained how we celebrate, which is quite different to what we do in England.
Now, how long had you been in England when this happened?
I think it was about 2 months, a little over 2 months, when she first wanted me to, you know, go and speak it.
You said you worked for a family. Did you work in the house with the housework and with the children? What was your position in the family life with this family in England?
Yeah, I took care of the house. Hushållningshjälp, what do you call it in English? House, yeah, I guess that's what you call it. But I also had to help take care of the kids and took the kids for walks, but I, in general, lived with the family. I was never, like when you ordinary work in a house, you're kept, you know, to your own, but not with these people. They were really, you know, nice people, too. And you stayed with them at all times. You went with them when they went on vacations and, you know.
Would you tell us some of the experiences that you had as a young boy on the sailing vessels? Tell us about your life.
Well, you mentioned sailing vessels. Actually, there wasn't sailing vessels. There were steamboats. But I had been on a smaller intercoastal sailing vessel at home after I more or less became graduated in the seamanship. But the beginning of it, as a young messman, which serves the meals in the mess halls or whatever dining area, what you call, and there were long hours, and there was hard work in them. Up early in the morning to see that all the equipment and all the mess halls and dishes and was clean and set on tables for the watches that went on and had to stay to the watch that came off, you know, that had to have their meal or dinner or whatever it was. So that was an early breakfast. It was always 7 o'clock start for serving, and it lasted till after 8, and then you had to clean and scrub and wash. And then you had the meal hour and dinner time and coffee time at 3 o'clock and dinner at between 5 and 7, because there was a shifting of the watches. But the worst part of it all was that you had to get up in the middle of night to make coffee just for 2 men. And you had to serve this. You had to bring the coffee to the bridge for the mate that was on watch. He had to have his coffee there before he went off, and the one that went on had to get it in the mess hall before he went on. And then you had to go down in the engine room and serve the engineer coffee that was down there, and he had his coffee while he was on watch, and so on. The other one was drinking coffee in the mess hall. But that was the worst part of the day, because it ruined your night's sleep, and then you had to get up again at 6 o'clock after you've been up at 3 o'clock. For that shift.
Ernst, now this was when you were a young man. Would this be expected of a young man today who goes out to sea from Scandinavia?
Well, I imagine it would be, because as of my profession now, I'm a longshoreman, and I work on the different ships, and I see all this. And once in a while, you do see some real young kids, and when you come to talk to them and ask them what they're doing on the ship, well, they always have the same position as I did when I was a young kid. And I imagine it would be the same, but I understand that this long hours and early up in the morning, like that 3 o'clock shift there that I was talking about before, I don't think that exists anymore.
While we've been going off on a tangent here, we've forgotten to say, who were your parents and what did they do in Denmark?
Well, my father, his name was Hans Christian. And I think he was a cabin maker in his younger days. I think we go back to World War I when he was a cabin maker. And later on, real estate insurance agent, which there wasn't a lot of money in there, and he expanded out, and he had a little, matter of fact, he had 3 grocery stores at one time. 2 grocery stores and a confectionery store. And one of my youngest sister worked for him in that confectionery store, and my other sister worked in the grocery store, and he was taking, him and mom was taking care of the third one. Lasted for a few years, and I imagine prices got so high in different items there that he couldn't exist, so he sold 2 of them, and especially the confectionery store, he got rid of that real fast, because there was too much of import of like to make their own chocolate and syrup and fancy candy, and there was too much work involved in it. And he was maybe losing more money than he was gaining on it. And he got rid of that store. I think he had it for about 3 or 4 years or something like that. But he kept the other two, and one of them became, he changed one in, became nothing but coffee and tea. That's all he saw.
And what was your mother's name?
My mother's name was Petrea Peterson. That was her maiden name. And she was, I think she was born in Weiler. Yeah. Well, both of them was born in Jylland, but I can't. I'm not sure if Dad was born in Weiler or if Mom was born in Weiler, but both of them was from Jylland in a way. And he settled in Knoxville. I don't know the year when they came to Knoxville, but he made their living down there.
How big a family do you come from?
Oh, that was quite a big one. We were 10 altogether. Now, what were we? Four boys and six girls. So that was quite a family, too, that he had to take care of. But it was a happy family.
How did you land in California? What made you decide to come to California?
Well, I think it was mostly their wife's health that was involved in it, because cold days and cold years back in Pennsylvania and New York there wasn't too healthy. So we thought we would move to California. And at the same time, at the time I was still sailing, and I thought I had an opportunity to sail with the passenger ships on the Hawaii run, on the Matson line, which would have been home something like every week. I think it took about 3 or 4 days over and 4 days back and a couple of days here. So that would have been every, let's say, every 10 or 12 days that I would have been home, instead of being on the cruises or the long trips going around the world or back to the Far East or something, which takes about 3 months. And this one here sounded a lot better. And also, a friend of mine, which I had known for many years, that lived here in California, that he told me at one time that if I should ever change my mind sailing, that he would help me to become a longshoreman out here. And I took him up on that. And that's where I'm at right now.
Inge, have you held any jobs while you have been a wife?
Yeah, quite a few, haven't I? Yeah. Well, which ones should we start with? Oh, I worked in a restaurant in New York, right? Yeah. And then while he went out to sea, we had just been married, he was going back to sea for the two long trips to the Far East, and then we were going to go home to Europe and meet the families. And then I worked in Lerner's, which was just around the corner from us, selling clothes to the little kiddies. Then at Schraff's, but where I worked in the kitchen as what they call the head salad girl. And then we moved to Pennsylvania, and for 3 years I didn't work. And then we came out here, and Ernst was against me working, and I didn't work for many years. Then I took in sewing, which I did for quite a while, and then dressmaking, I guess you call it. Then a few years back, I started selling Avon from door to door, which is very interesting. You meet a lot of nice people. And then I worked in a hospital for about 2 months. And
you also had a family.
Yeah, we have a daughter, 21 years old now, Susan. She was born in New York, in Brooklyn, in a Norwegian hospital. And in 1968, she had never been to Denmark. We took her home to Denmark to be confirmed and to meet the family. And she had her preparation here in a Lutheran church. It took 2 years so that she could take the confirmation in the Danish church after we got back home.
Would you tell us a little bit more about this? That must have been an unusual experience for the other people being confirmed at that time. Could you tell us a little bit more about that confirmation?
Well, actually, I don't think really that there's that much to tell about it, because he was kept a little quiet until the night that they had what they call a little coffee meeting, which is just before Sunday before the confirmation, so that the parents can meet the pastor and they all sit down and have a little talk. And this is where the pastor did announce that they had a young girl that had come all the way from California to be confirmed in her mother's old church. That's my opinion, this part.
Now, did your daughter speak Danish?
Yes, she does speak Danish, and she writes Danish. But it took us many years to find out, or before she would let into it, that she knew or understood Danish. Because when she was a baby, she would always tell us to be quiet when Inge and I were speaking Danish. But then later on, we found out that when we were sitting and we were trying to talk amongst ourselves something in Danish that we didn't want her to understand or have knowledge of what we were talking about, and she would come right back out and say, "Oh, I know what you were talking about," like that, you know. So we found out or realized right then and there that she knew more in the Danish language than we thought she did. And later on in years, she was picking it up. And as we made the trip to Denmark, like Inge just explained, and she got with the kids home. Oh, no, we sent her home.
No.
No, was it after? Well, no. When we had her home for confirmation, she learned. And then, was it the next year, I think we sent her over there by herself on a vacation trip. And she really picked up the Danish language over there. Being amongst the kids, I imagine that's what did it over there. And when she came home, and I told her, I said, "Now, how do you like it now?" "Oh," she said, I'm going to study more on that Danish language." So I said, "Yeah, you better." So actually, it came like overnight, because today she can read and write in the Danish language.
Now, when you went back to Denmark, you had been absent for a little while. I'd like to have both of you comment on this. What changes did you find in Denmark from the time you had lived there?
Oh, wow. That's kind of hard to explain. Because I had been back a couple of times, but the longest span we had was 14 years, where we had not been in the old country, you see. But... well, I don't know. They had gotten their supermarkets just like we had over here, which was something we never had before. Before that, each shop was individual. You would have a coffee shop, or you would have a candy shop, or you would have a, you know, regular old-fashioned little grocery shop. But they had all gone into that it was just one combined, just like we had here. And they had changed the streetcars a little bit, and old people themselves was in a hustle and a bustle a little more than before. The only thing I found is that they are a little more lenient than they were when I was a young girl. And you also will find that the schools was something that had changed quite a bit. The things that the kids was allowed to do when we were there the last time was something that was just unheard of when we went to school. I mean, you just didn't do the things that they're doing nowadays. So something like that. Well, yeah, I guess that did change quite a bit since we lived there.
How did you feel about any of the changes you noticed?
Well, I can't speak for the big city, because, like Copenhagen. I spent very little time in Copenhagen. Most of my time as a boy being home was in Nakskov. And the only thing that I could see in Nakskov was that it had expanded quite a bit after I came home for the first time. But otherwise, I imagine the prices were different, and the building was different all the way around. I mean, the old houses that used to be there went up like big apartment building and big superstructures and so on. But otherwise, somebody noticed something more than others do, and actually, that's about the only thing that I could comment on.
As I look around your home here, I can see that you do have a great influence of Danish pictures and statuary and things in your home. Would you tell us, both of you, what you do in your daily life that is Danish, maybe is different from what Americans do?
Well, as far as Christmas is concerned, we have a real old-fashioned Danish Christmas tree. And we have the combination of what the Americans use, electric lighting, and we also have the live candlelights on our tree. And it's a tree anywhere from 6 inches up to 8 feet in height. And it's fully decorated with the Danish flags and the American flags and whatever you can think of putting on a Christmas tree. And it's a real tradition at Christmas in this home. And more or less everything is, you can't say it's all Danish, because we do celebrate all the holidays in Danish holidays. And I have, on the holidays we have here, I fly both the Danish and the American flags on my flagpole outside. And some people be a little curious what I'm doing that for. Do you want to know what's going on here? How come are you having two flags up there? And he said, you're supposed to have the California state flag with the American flag. I said, no. I said, I'm a Danish descent, and I can fly both flags as long as I fly the American flag above the Danish flag. So everybody seemed to take it for granted that that's legal, which it is legal.
It depends of if we have American company coming in or we have just Danish people for Christmas dinners. It all depends of they right what we make. Now, if we are just a self, and then we have either roast goose or we have roast duck, but have the American people coming in, I have a tendency to make turkey because it's more in favor of everybody that's around. But on New Year's Eve, we always have boiled codfish. It's a little hard to get at this part of the world, but we buy what we call the rock cod, I think that's what they call it. And you can boil that, and it tastes almost like true codfish like we have at home, with boiled potatoes, and it's a white gravy with a kind of a mustard in it that it gives a kind of a strong flavor. And that's a well-known traditional dinner for New Year's Eve. And at 12 o'clock, if we are up, it'd be been some years, that is a tradition that you have æbleskiver, what we call æbleskiver. Unfortunately, I cannot make them. So here in this household, we have pancakes. I about that.
In talking to some of the older immigrants, they have told us about jumping into the new year. Did you have any kind of tradition like that? And if you didn't, was there something else that you did that made the New Year's Eve special?
Yes. But like you said, jumping into new... I have never heard of that expression. But it might be true. But what we... used to do, or what we did on New Year's, we honked it in by being out in our cars and just leaning on the horn at the stroke of 12. And so we called it a honking in the New Year.
Before we quit, I'd like to know, how do you...